Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to the show. It's Connecting Faith here on the Faith Radio Network. I'm Neil Stavem. Great to have you along today. Ted Ross at the controls. Carissa's at the phones. Hope that you'll be wanting to join in with us. I'm sure you will, because we've got a great topic today. And it seemed appropriate that if we're, you know, getting winter a little earlier than we anticipated, that we talk with somebody who, lives in Alaska.
And, misery loves company,
sure,
kind of thing.
Yeah. Actually, she's been done some traveling, does traveling frequently, but actually brought that all that cold, stormy weather with her. So anyway, but we are talking, glad to welcome back today Leslie Leyland Fields. We're going to talk today about the spirit of food. I should mention, though, before we introduce Leslie again and get into our topic, that for those in the Twin Cities area, at least, from Minnesota, this is a Give to the Max Day. It's essentially just kind of an online giving opportunity to provide for charities and nonprofits and things.
Yes, and we are eligible for that as a nonprofit here at Faith Radio.
Yeah. In fact, if you go to our website, myfaithradio.com, we've got a link right to our page, so you don't have to do any searching at all. You can just, if that's something you want to be involved in, then we'd certainly appreciate your generosity and your involvement in that. And many charities, nonprofits are listed there, and we're just happy to be part of that. So
yeah, it's real easy. MyFaithRadio.com. The first thing you see on our page is Give to the Max Minnesota. Click on the Give button. It'll take you right to where you need to be.
Yeah. So if you're listening in the Twin Cities to Faith Radio and just want to be a part of the supporting and be involved in that, thank you for that. Let's get to today's topic. We're going to talk about the spirit of food today. And hear insights from a number of writers. In fact, the book is a compilation of 34 writers on feasting and fasting toward God. That's the subtitle. The book is edited by Leslie Leyland Fields, who's a writer and editor, national speaker, and lives on Kodiak Island, Alaska, and Harvester Island in the summer. She lives on Kodiak Island in the winter and in the summer, Harvester Island, where she joins her family in a commercial salmon fishing operation. We talked with Leslie a while back about her book about forgiveness, which was just powerful. And this is one that she's written, put together here. Oh, it's been a couple of years, I think, isn't it, Leslie? When did this come together here?
Yeah, it actually was in 2010, which doesn't seem possible. Oh, my goodness, it's almost 5 years ago. But food is, you know, a classic. It, you know, there's no, you can't date it except for expiration dates.
Yes, right.
Camps,
yeah,
you know,
right,
but
which is, you know, that's my joke is that I, you know, my idea of living dangerously is to eat cottage cheese past the expiration date. But that's as much humor as you're going to get from this hour. So anyway, so get that out of the way now. Well, Leslie's written
that's
a number.
That's your one joke.
That's it. Well, you know, we'll see where it goes today. Maybe I'll be inspired. But
you might be inspired.
You know, well, let's jump in. I mean, you've been writing. You got 3 graduate degrees and do a lot of teaching and training in this area. But you love to bake and to cook as well. And I'm wondering. You know, it seems like there's really been an explosion of growth in cooking shows and, you know, kitchen stores, recipe books and supplies. I mean, what is it with our fascination of food?
Yeah, we are, aren't we? We are fascinated with food. And when I first started writing The Spirit of Food, you know, I thought there were all these cooking shows and it seemed as if the media was saturated with food. But, you know, since then, since 5 years ago, there are more and more and more shows. So we seem to continue to be really just almost obsessive, this interest in food. And of course, you know, there are lots of reasons, but one is, you know, food is what keeps us alive. And so we're either eating food or thinking about food.
Yeah.
So it's a huge part It's a huge part of our lives. And I think it's good. I think it's good that we're thinking about food. It's not always good. We can be too obsessed with it, and we can look to food to save us. We can create an idol out of food, and I think that happens as well in the midst of this whole food movement. And that's why it's really important that we kind of gain, I think, a biblical perspective on food and the value of food and the place of food in our lives.
Well, it seemed appropriate here as we're heading toward Thanksgiving, just to, you know, literally a couple of weeks away now, that, you know, food is kind of on our mind in that respect. All right, what are we going to have? How are we going to prepare it? All those things. And so to be able to talk about the spirit of food, and let's, you know, address that title. I mean, how do we get to sort of the quote-unquote the spirit of food, not see it simply as a commodity?
Right, right. And, you know, we are busy people, we Americans, and we tend to compartmentalize our lives. And we move quickly from, you know, work to home. We get home and, you know, we got to have dinner on the table in 30 minutes. Okay, now I'm going to think about dinner. I grab a box or a package or a, you know, something, throw it in the microwave. And we tend, in the past, I think we have looked at food as simply fuel for our bodies. And I think there's also has been this prevailing metaphor of our bodies as a machine. And now in this age of technology, you know, we think of our brains as a computer, you know, and our bodies as a machine, which is really very reductionistic, right? It really is reducing us to, you know, a mere machine. And so we've looked at food that way, too, that this is just simply, you know, just like you drive your car to the gas station and you pump it full of gas. We sit down at the table and we put food in our bodies and fuel up, and then off we go to the rest of life. And I think we've been doing this for quite some time, that, you know, that the table is the filling station, and that, you know, we have these busy lives with our kids and we don't have time to cook. So we're going to just run through the drive-thru and pick up some burgers quick as we run to soccer practice. And, you know, and I'm not criticizing those things, because sometimes that's just what you have to do. But I think there's also a recognition that we're missing something. We're missing something. Surely there's more. There's more to food and there's more to our bodies than this. And I'm glad to see that we are giving more attention to food, more attention to our health. You know, I think it's addressing some real areas of need that we've had. And I think people are recognizing that.
Tell me sort of how the book is laid out, maybe a little bit. By the way, we do have 3 copies to give away, and this is just, it's wonderful reading, plus there's some great recipes at the end of each essay, 34 writers on feasting and fasting toward God, just a variety of things. We'll kind of lay that out. But if you'd like to be in the drawing for one of those copies, it would just be a treasure that you would enjoy having or give to a friend. And try some of the recipes. You can, and we'd love to have you join the conversation as well. Here's our phone number. It's 877-93-FAITH. It's 877-933-2484. So talk a little bit about just some of the essays in terms of maybe some of the big themes of what we're trying to address.
Right, right. Yeah, so it's divided up into different sections, and the first section is on the way to the table. So this is looking at, you know, the growing of food and the harvesting of food. So the first essay is called Wild Fruit by Patty Kirk, and this is just a gorgeous essay about picking berries. She lives in Oklahoma, and I am a fanatical berry picker myself, and I'm a fanatical jam and jelly maker, and she is also. And so she's writing about, you know, going out and picking the berries off the vines and the bushes, and then making the jam, and she ends her essay with this really beautiful paragraph that helps us see the bigger picture. Like, what is this about? What are we doing? And why do we find that so deeply satisfying and even spiritual? And here's what she says: gathering and preserving wild fruit for me is to share in the most elemental way in what it means to be human, made in the image of God, guardians of earth and sea and sky, male and female, alive. God's creation, the berries themselves, the creatures that I share them with, the shade, the breeze I wouldn't have noticed if I were not picking berries, humbles me in comparison to my own. And to participate in the created world in this way, and to give little jars of sweetness to the people I love, seems to me the greatest blessing I can expect in this world or the next. And so the idea of when we're out there, whether we're picking wild fruit off the vine or we're harvesting, zucchini that we grew, we are getting to participate in the growing and in the creation of the world that God, God made it all and he named it all very, very good. He put us in a garden and he said, here it is. This is my gift for you. Now dress it and keep it and tend it. And we get to still do that. Neil, we get to go out and grow things and put our hands in God's earth and God's soil and to watch, the activity of God upon that plant and then to pick its fruit. And it was given to us to feed us. And so just the growing of food, I think, reminds us of where we are as part of creation. And we get to join God in creating new life and creating new things.
I love Lauren Winter is one of the writers, essay writers here, and I have appreciated her writing for years anyway. And a line that I wrote down, Winter says, a right relationship with food points us toward him, as in points us toward God. And that's really kind of what we're saying here, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It is indeed. And I can't tell you, there are so many ways in which this is true. And of course, that's the whole point of the book. Every one of the essays kind of takes us to a little bit of a different area. Brian Volk has an essay called Late October Tomatoes. And he lives, the thing is, we don't have to live on a farm to participate in the growing of food. We can have, you can have a little window box, a box in your window and grow herbs. And Brian lives in the suburbs of Cincinnati, and he's just got a small backyard, but he grows tomatoes there, very lovingly grows tomatoes, as his father did before him. His father kind of taught him how to grow tomatoes. And Brian writes about making soup. He's making spicy tomato soup for breakfast, and he talks about, let me find this spot here. He talks about, here's what he says, when I take the time to cook attentively, observing the rituals my mother taught me, there's a way in which my parents and benefactors, living and dead, are present. So, food connects us to our past as well. And we always think of ourselves living in the moment only. But food, the recipes passed down for generations, that's just a really cool way that we're connected to our families and connected to love. And then he says, the meals that we share as a family are different than the sandwich and coffee I grab for lunch at work. He says, at work, I can still mentally thank the worker who spread the tuna on my bread, the campesino who picked the coffee beans. But at home, the links are tighter, the connections more visible. At the table, my family is reconstituted. So I love that idea, that when it's dinner time, and same with my family, all of us, we're running in 100 different directions, but at dinner time, our family is reconstituted, and we gather together to share. And it's not just the food that we're sharing in, Neil, right? Our bodies need food, and we're gonna eat this food. But we're also sharing the presence of one another. We're feasting on the presence of one another. We're feasting on the presence of Christ among us. when we break that bread with love and share it together.
Love that idea of family reconstituted. A good food word, and we're going to talk more. Wonderful words, wonderful writing. It's in a collection called The Spirit of Food, 34 Writers on Feasting and Fasting Toward God. And Leslie Leyland Fields is the editor of this, and she's a writer and speaker and knows a lot about food. And we're going to get to some of her maybe, food adventures, all that coming up. Got some copies of the book to give away. Love to have you sign up for that. Love to have you join the conversation, too. Maybe there's a special meal tradition you'd like to share about, or as we go through the hour, you'll be prompted about maybe a particular memory as we see how, food, understanding food, it can point us toward God. It connects us to creation, to community, to each other, and to Christ. And we'll talk about it in the moments ahead here on Connecting Faith. 877-933-2484.
Let all things now live in a song of thanksgiving to God the Creator, triumphantly raised.
We're a couple weeks away from Thanksgiving Day. Doesn't mean that can be grateful now, and indeed we are. And every time we gather around a meal, there oftentimes is a blessing said, and we're going to talk a little bit about that, why that is, and what that means. We're happy to talk today with Leslie Leyland Fields. She's back with us here on Connecting Faith, a writer and editor and a national speaker. Helps with her family in a commercial salmon fishing operation. She's written, 7 or 8 books or more. The one that we're talking about, she's edited, called The Spirit of Food, 34 Writers on Feasting and Fasting Toward God, and talking about ways that we connect to each other and to creation. And it reminded me, Leslie, you were talking a few minutes ago that, there's a lot of young people today, and probably a lot of us adults as well, that really don't have any idea how to make meals from scratch, or maybe even understand sort of how the food actually gets to our tables. But one of the stories there about a little family gathering with the teens over,
yeah.
and just they started actually making a meal.
Yeah. This, I love this essay. It's by Stephen Baldwin and Karen Baldwin, and they're talking about. They're in the kitchen and they're making spaghetti, but it's with fresh pasta, and I think it's homemade bread, and their teenage children are there in the kitchen with them, and then a bunch of their teenagers' friends are there, and so the friends are there and they're watching them, cook this meal, and they are just astounded. I mean, to them, this is like a magic show. Like they've never seen, of course, pasta made from scratch and a sauce made from scratch and the salad, and they're just astounded, and they really realize that, wow, most people don't do this anymore, and they begin sort of including them and bringing them in and teaching them how to do this and showing them, here's how you set the table. And when you set a beautiful table, what you're saying is, this is a place to linger. This is a place not just to feed your face. This is a place to be together and to share together. And how important that is, for us to pass that on to our children. And this generation of kids, a lot of them haven't seen that. My kids have sure seen it, but lots of kids haven't seen it. So I think bringing kids into the kitchen and put an apron on them and, bring out the flour bin and the sugar and the vegetables and the fruits and, just a whole new world will open up to them.
Yeah. And I was thinking, too, there's so many, eat alone or at random times or in front of a screen, there's not a lot. We're missing a lot, aren't we?
Oh, we really are. And Neil, I want to be real about this too, and recognize, because my life is so busy. I know everyone else has really busy lives, and I know that we cannot sit down 3 times a day you know, to this beautiful homemade meal and sit and linger at, you know, over our food. I know we can't do that three times a day, but I think a lot of times we can do that once a day, you know, at least once a day. And we feel the difference sitting in front of our computer, you know, cramming a sandwich down our throat because we've got a deadline, you know, for this article. And, you know, I do that way too many times. And, you know, that's when we're treating our body like a machine. But sometimes that's necessary. But when we have space and when we have time, or make space, make time to cook thoughtfully and to enjoy the, you know, one of the things I love is purple cabbage. I love cutting open a head of purple cabbage and look at the whorl and the design of that cabbage, just like a fingerprint. And every cabbage has its own fingerprint, you know. And I just take a minute and I look at that and just marvel at the beauty of the color and the texture and how God has implanted a unique design within every one of those cabbages. And so just kind of create that space where we can cook and serve and prepare and eat food together just with a sense of joy and a sense of the presence of the Lord among us and with us. And you know what we'll find, Neil, when we bring that attentiveness, we'll find, number one, we don't need to eat as much food because it's not now about quantity of food. It's not about how much food we can eat. I think when we eat thoughtfully, mindfully, and with our spirit, food begins to feed us. Our whole being, not just our body. It feeds our spirit, it feeds our soul, it feeds our heart. And I think we find that we don't have to eat quite as much of it to enjoy it.
And you mentioned the your purple cabbage, and just what a great visual picture. And those, you know, we can just kind of see it. But several of the writers quoted a apparently kind of a classic work about the importance of maybe spending an hour with an onion. We got just a couple of minutes before break, but just say a word about that.
Yeah. Oh, that's one of my favorite chapters in there. It's from it's by Robert Farrar Capon and his famous book, The Supper of the Lamb. And so there's this chapter, The Heavenly Onion. And he talks about, he instructs us, and it's really fun. It's almost sort of funny, but it's also just gorgeously beautiful. He says, okay, you need an hour. You need an hour to cut this onion. And he leads us through this very slow and meditative cutting and slicing of this onion. And in the end, I'm not going to give it away, but in the end, this onion becomes this beautiful picture of heaven itself and God's love for us. And we, you know, heaven for us is normally, we've just got it up in the clouds, up in the air somewhere, you know, just airy and spiritual. And Capon reminds us that heaven is coming down to earth. And the food, the smell and the taste and the texture in our hands on the food and in the food, so concrete and so real, and all of our senses are alive and awake, and that's what heaven's going to be like.
We're talking the spirit of food. It's a wonderful collection, 34 writers on feasting and fasting toward God. Edited by Leslie Leyland Fields, our guest today on Connecting Faith. Got some copies to give away. Love to have you interact with us as well. The number is 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Stay tuned. There's more to come. That's good. Who's that, Ted?
Lyle Lovett, song called Church.
Okay.
It's pretty good.
Well, that, you know, We do church here once in a while here on the show. So you're listening to Connecting Faith, and we've connected again with Leslie Leyland Fields, who is kind enough to join us. We visited with her a couple months ago about her her latest book, and that's powerful and important reading, and I encourage that to you. But this is one that she edited here a few years back called The Spirit of Food, 34 Writers on Feasting and Fasting Toward God. Leslie's a writer and editor and a speaker and lives in Alaska on Kodiak Island in the winter and Harvester Island in the summer, where she joins her family in a commercial salmon fishing operation. Is it six children?
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. So a yeah. Big family. When you're doing the commercial fishing operation, then the family gets a little bigger, right? You're feeding the crew working. Is that right?
Yeah. And then we often have several crew with us as well. So when I'm fixing meals out there, I'm feeding anywhere from 8 to 14 people. Hungry people, fishermen.
Yes. Well, I want to talk about, in fact, maybe we'll just ask you, I want to talk a little bit about Thanksgiving, but I'm just curious, do you ever get tired of salmon? I mean, you've been doing salmon fishing for years.
Yeah. You know what? I really don't. And, you know, it's one of the super foods. So yeah. I really try to eat it every day in some shape or form. And I do lots of different things with salmon. Like I do smoked salmon, and I make salmon burgers, and I do smoked salmon link sausage I make. And so I do lots of different things with salmon just because I love it. And, you know, it's one of the healthiest foods around. So I have to be really careful that I don't like burn out my kids on
okay.
it. So I don't feed it to them every day. They'd kill me.
All
if
right.
they would. If I
I'm getting kind of hungry
that.
Though. So does Thanksgiving at the Fields house, does that have salmon involved in it?
You know, not usually, but this year it is going to. I have to tell you something exciting that we're doing for Thanksgiving that we've never done before. We are actually going out to our fish camp island, so Harvester Island, and that island is 80 miles away from our home in the town of Kodiak. So you just have to imagine, a little tiny island off of this giant island, and my children and I are my husband and I are the only ones who live on that island, and that's where we commercial fish. But we're going out there for Thanksgiving, and we're bringing our two youngest sons, and my other four older kids are grown and gone, but we're also bringing a bunch of people from our church. So that our Thanksgiving out there is going to be, I think, a little closer to what the original Thanksgiving was, because we're going to be hunting our own deer and having salmon, from right there. And, you know, just kind of as many local things, you know, from that island that we can have for Thanksgiving. So I'm excited about that.
It's going to be. You'll get what you catch, right? I guess, or you know.
Right, yeah. Right, and we are, to get out to the island, we'll go in a bush plane and then ride in an open skiff. And riding in a skiff in the winter time is very,
okay.
So there's a certain amount of suffering that will be involved here.
I would say yes.
Truthfully, the suffering is what makes food, you know, that work and that effort to get that meal, that's what makes food taste really, really good.
You know, say more about that, because, I mean, we think of sort of hospitality in the food preparation link, but there is something about the activity of doing it, right, that we can't overlook.
Oh, absolutely. I think, and that's, you know, we started talking about my book and the different chapters in the book. So the second section is called In the Kitchen, and is about the, people together, cooking together, and just kind of the fellowship and just the amazing things that happen just even in that, just in the preparation itself before we've even put it on the table and people are sitting down to enjoy it. But Neil, I was going to, I hope this isn't too much of a diversion.
No,
but,
go ahead.
You know, yeah. the point I was making earlier about sort of suffering that's involved, you know, that food tastes better when there's a little suffering involved. And I actually literally think that that's true. And maybe suffering is too strong of a word. But one of our problems as Americans is that we have too much food. And when it comes to a feast day like Thanksgiving or Christmas, the problem is that we feast every day. We really do. We have so many food choices. Most of us can eat whatever we want, whenever we want. And so consequently, when we come to the table, you know, we may or may not be hungry. You know, we've eaten well the rest of the day, and okay, it's another meal. But I tell you something, there's a chapter in this book about fasting. And I think there are lots of different ways to fast. But the larger point is that there are times, Neil, when I think we need to be hungry. I think we need to experience hunger, and I think we need to experience need. And we can be afraid of that. I know I am. I'm afraid, you know, I go through times, I'm afraid to be hungry. I'm afraid to be needy. But we need to be needy because that's our true state. Yeah. That's our true state before God, that we are dependent, needy creatures. And I think sometimes we need to skip a meal. Or what I do sometimes before Thanksgiving is I'll just for several days ahead, I'll just eat very lightly. Or I'll just eat rice and beans, or I'll just have bread and fruit, or I'll just draw some boundaries, and experience actually what most of the rest of the world experiences, that you don't have access to everything you want all the time. It's good to experience need and hunger, and I think if you want food to really taste good, if you want to be really thankful, be hungry.
Yeah.
Experience need. And when we do that too, we remember and we experience just a little taste of what it's like for our brothers and sisters across the globe who do experience hunger on a daily basis.
And I would think too, probably I think you address it even toward the end of the book when it's time to feast, then it's time to feast. I mean, we don't really fully enter into and appreciate the feast then if we haven't really understood the fast, perhaps.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's the same idea as sort of pain and joy. And, you know, C.S. Lewis talks about that, you know, pain is a megaphone that helps us to hear God. And without pain, we can't even experience joy. And without joy and pain are so necessary to one another. And it's the same thing with food. There are times when, man, we just need to feast. But we can't even feast properly and feast with the kind of celebration and joy and worship and thanksgiving, you know, that we should have unless we have also fasted.
Leslie Leyland Fields, my guest today. We're talking about food, the spirit of food, and we're talking about, you know, Thanksgiving and our heart attitudes. And Leslie, I know one of the essays deals with saying the blessing. And I think, you know, as we head into Thanksgiving, obviously that's part of it. We're grateful. But I think it's 1 Timothy 4 talks about, you know, God has given us, you know, everything good. It all comes from Him. And so what do we need to learn maybe, or how can we approach that before meal blessing differently?
Yeah, and that's so well connected to what I just talked about. When we come to the table and we look at the food and we just think, oh, same old, or we don't have an attitude of gratitude. I think it's important maybe to stop and to try to figure out why that is, what's going on. And look at maybe we're eating too much through the day. Maybe we need to withhold a little bit. Maybe we need to be a little more conscious of what it is that we're eating. Maybe we need to stop thinking of our bodies as machines. So we come to the table, and it is an interesting phrase that we use. We say we're blessing the food. Isn't that interesting how we say that? No, because really we need to be blessing God.
Yeah.
Right? Right? And because we're blessing and hopefully we can just for a moment catch this larger vision of what we're doing. You know, we're blessing God who created this food and who made us and who gave us, you know, these wonderful, amazing bodies that we have, and who has also made us completely dependent on Him. We're dependent on food. If we don't eat, we die. And so we're gathering together to acknowledge we are dependent on You, Lord. You are the one who feeds us. You are the one who created this amazing creation and who gave it to us for our food. You are the one who has grown the grain that has made this bread possible. And then you look at who has gathered around the table with you, whether they are your family or your friends, but God has given them to you as well to love and to serve. And it's just this whole big picture of who God is in our lives and the incredible bounty and blessing that He has given to us through this food, through one another, and even literally through bread. I think every time, it's hard to do this. We can't do this every time. But when we pick up a piece of bread and we break that bread, maybe for a moment we can remember what Christ said, "This is my body broken for you." And I think one of the reasons that Jesus chose bread and wine as the symbols of His death and resurrection is that they were common daily foods. They were foods that people ate and drank every day. And so there is this possibility that we sit down to that meal. Maybe it's that daily supper, or maybe breakfast is the meal we all share together, and we break that bread. Maybe we can just even say, "Lord, as we break this bread, help us to remember this is Your body broken for us."
Rich conversation we're having today with Lester Leyland Fields. We're talking about the spirit of food, about having a connection with food, how food points us, the right perspective on food can point us toward God. It connects us to creation, to community, connects us to Christ. And we're talking more about it with Leslie in just a moment. Love to have you join the conversation if you like. And also, we do have three copies of her book, The Spirit of Food, to give away. It'd be a great resource. It's got some recipes in the back of each chapter as well, which is kind of fun. 877-933-2484. That's the number, 877-933-2484. Today to Connecting Faith. We connected with Leslie Leyland Fields, a writer, editor, national speaker. Has written 8 or more books. I haven't kept track, I guess, but I recommend them to you. And the one that we're referencing today is called The Spirit of Food, and it's something Leslie's edited. Features 34 writers on feasting and fasting toward God. And it's certainly appropriate. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, this book, I was so honored. This book ended up winning 4 awards for best, one of the best 10 best books of 2010. So that was a huge honor.
Well, it's nourishing, I guess. Mark Galley writes in the back. He said, "I'd like to resist the temptation to pun, describing this as a rich feast of essays, or essays one will relish with delight, or essays that one should savor and so forth. But I can't." He said, "This He said, this collection is a meal for the mind, and it really is, and we've enjoyed the conversation. I was just thinking, you know, Leslie, just before the break, talking a little bit about how we, you know, come before the meal with blessing and thinking, you know, there are some kids that become picky eaters and, yeah. you know, they grow up into adults, and I don't know, you've got six that have come through your household, and how did you kind of work through some of those? I mean, it's okay to have preferences, I guess, but how do we have maybe more grateful attitude when we're coming into Thanksgiving season?
Yeah. You know, I was really blessed. I did not have any picky eaters, and I think that's one of the something that comes when you have a large family. You know, it's like this is what I'm making, and this is what we're all eating. And I do know that it's sort of a reality that in some homes it's a little more like a restaurant approach where the kids kind of put in their order for what they want, and I never did that. I really like the idea of when you sit down at the table, you eat whatever has been prepared for you, because it has been prepared with love, and it has been prepared with usually with thoughts about nutrition, or you know, whoever prepared that food, even if it you know, with something popped in the microwave and it is served before you, it's really important that we recognize this food is still from God, and it is still coming from the hands of someone who loves us. And this is their provision for us. And whether it's a hot dog or whether it's fresh grilled salmon, I think we really do need to just be thankful. Thank you, Lord, for feeding me. Thank you for feeding me today. And I'm thankful I never had to struggle with that, but I think we can sometimes create that. We can sometimes allow our kids a little bit too much control over what we prepare. I think as the heads of the household, whether, you know, it's the mother or father, both of you together, we make decisions about how we feed our children, and we should be the ones who are making those decisions.
At least
when our children are young.
Yeah, you have a good essay about making bread, kind of the concluding chapter of the book, and you may want to share. We sort of talked about the importance of bread, but it reminded me as I was reading it, I thought, you know, I sort of had trouble trusting the recipe. I don't know. Does that happen for you? I mean, you know, what is that about? And I was actually made me think about it. I said, did the phrase actually following that to a T? Is that because of a recipe using a teaspoon? Is that what that means? I don't know. But I just curious to know if you have trouble following recipes and if that says anything about us.
Oh, you know what? I look at recipes as suggestions. You know, that's what I've been cooking for a long time, and so like I look at the recipe and I understand what the main idea is, but I always want to do it myself, and I think that's great. I think that's what we're doing when we're cooking. We are, in some ways, it's an echo of God Himself, right? Who assembled and created this vast universe, and just look at all the variety of fruits and vegetables and all the foods that He gave us, and we get to sort of echo God and His creativity, His boundless creativity, when we cook ourselves, when we take these elements of creation and we assemble them in brand new ways and using different spices and herbs and different cooking techniques. And we're just cooking up a little world right there in our kitchen, you know, and that is so fun and so adventurous. And cooking should be fun. It should be adventurous. I think when God created the world, I think he was having such fun. Really, I mean, you just have to look. You look at a giraffe, and you say, "You know, God was having a blast doing this." And we should have that same. It should be that kind of fun too when we're cooking. And so for me, that means like not following the recipe exactly. But for someone else, following that recipe exactly, that might be a ton of fun for them.
Yeah. I appreciate it, too. I'm trying to remember the article. Maybe it was Lauren Winters again, talking about sort of eating in season. That sort of helps us understand the rhythms of life in some ways, too, right? We start out talking about berries, you know, in the summertime. But, so.
Yes, yes. And I really believe that as much as we can, you know, there's a big push to eat locally. And I think there are lots of really good reasons to do that, and even theological reasons. But that's part of being immersed in our creation and in the whole cycle of growing and harvesting. And if there's some way that we can buy produce from, you know, the organic farmer down the street, then I think that's a very good thing to do. I think that's one way that we love our neighbors, and our neighbors are stewarding God's creation by growing organically and not using lots of pesticides and herbicides. And I think that's part of it. We haven't talked about this, but this is a whole other element of what is our responsibility as stewards of God's creation. And I think this carries right over into our food lives, that we support those who are trying to grow and harvest food, you know, we're trying to treat animals, you know, with dignity and care, and that we support those people who are treating creation with love.
I think maybe that's the it's we've been so accustomed to just whatever we want is readily available, whether it comes from Argentina or Chile or wherever
right.
it is, you know, we don't really think about the process that, and of course, many listening in the Faith Radio Network are in rural areas where the crops are in, hopefully by now. And so there's this really, even at Thanksgiving time, it is that sense of, the crops have come in, and this is the bounty as a result of that.
Yeah. And this is what God, and those of us who grow or harvest our food in some way, we get to see that. We get to see, you know, what God has done, how he brought the rain and how he brought the sun and how he held off the snow, although, you know, not at the moment, but, you know, God's, because God, of course, is intimately involved in all of his creation in that way.
Reflecting on food, how it connects us to creation, community, and to Christ himself. And really, that's part of it. You spent some time in the book just talking about sort of that communion aspect of it. And maybe, here we got a few minutes left, just say a word more about that as we, you know, maybe it gets back to just the bread and the wine, but understanding that, you know, God is intimately involved in our lives.
Yeah. You know, the moment of communion is so... You know, that night before Christ was sacrificed on the cross for us, and he had that last meal. And I think I'm going to go ahead and read from my essay, which is the last essay in the book, and from the very end of it. That might be a good way to wrap this up. And I hope I don't run over, and if I do,
no,
you can
just
cut me
off. No, that's fine. Go ahead.
Okay. So I'm going to return us to that moment of the Last Supper, and I'll just go from there. Even the maker of the world did not make the bread he broke that final night. The grain was grown by a farmer down the road. The bread was made by someone he did not know, bought and carried by another up to a borrowed room. He laid his hands on someone else's bread, blessed it, and claimed it. This is my body. And passed it to waiting hands, to every hungry soul, and it was done. Their bread became his bread, became ours. So many hands upon the bread until it was finished, the bread of his body for the hunger of the world. And when we think about food and we think about Christ, you know, Christ is food. Christ is our bread. And he identified himself precisely as that. I am the bread of life. And Alexander Schmemann has this wonderful quote. He says, Christ is our bread because from the very beginning, all our hunger was a hunger for him.
I hope that as we've had a conversation today, that you have found yourself hungering more for the bread of life. And you'll find it enriching to read The Spirit of Food. I recommend it to you. Leslie Leland Fields has edited it. It features 34 writers, including Leslie, in that. As we head into Thanksgiving, grateful in new and rich ways, even as we prepare the meal and as we sit to feast together, and perhaps even for the next couple of weeks do some fasting just in preparation for that. Leslie is a national speaker, a writer, editor, and I recommend her works to you, and she's honored us with her presence today. Leslie, it's so good to have you back with us on Connecting Faith.
Oh, thank you. It was a lot of fun. And you know what? Honestly, I'm, like, really hungry right now.
Well, that's kind of – I was thinking the very same thing. So, for what we're about to receive, make us truly grateful. I guess maybe that's where we'll go with that. Leslie, thanks once again for joining. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Thank you. And blessings on you and your family.
You're listening to Connecting Faith. You can catch the podcast if you missed part of today's show. We post it online at myfaithradio.com. It's myfaithradio.com. Click on the Connecting Faith Show page.